The second half of 2017 has not been a good one for powerful men who've used their power and status as a de facto Tinder account. New accusations against powerful men being taken down by their alleged behavior have come at a pretty steady clip since the downfall of movie mega-producer Harvey Weinstein. But scandals and allegations about sexual misconduct among powerful men are nothing new. So I wanted to understand, why now are we having such a deep conversation about this? For this episode of Convo, I spoke with Dr. Sharon Kowalski. She's an associate professor of history and the director of the Gender Studies Program at Texas A&M University Commerce. So as we continue in this conversation about harassment nationwide and everything, is it becoming pretty clear that it's not so much that anybody's saying anything new that people haven't been saying for a long time? It's the difference now is that people are listening. There's an engaged conversation. So I'm curious, what do you think is actually allowing this conversation to be taking place now?
I think that there are a couple of things. First of all, the enthusiasm or the fears or concerns that were fostered or arose out of the last presidential election, and especially women's concerns about the direction that the country was going in and the status of women in society, helped to create a willingness among women in particular to stand up and make their voices heard in a way that they hadn't before. And we can see that in a growing number of women who are now filing and running for public office, and in the women's marches and the continuous effort to maintain a more vocal presence in society on the part of women. And I think that the allegations of sexual harassment now, when they've come up, as they always have, now have a different sort of platform that women are not willing to sit quietly or to allow payoffs to just go unreported, but are becoming more and more willing to speak up. And I think that as more and more women have spoken, and these social media campaigns to raise awareness of how widespread this problem is have continued, that this has created an atmosphere where women feel more supported in coming forward, and women feel like their concerns and their experiences are going to be taken seriously, which is something that hadn't really happened before.
When it comes to men, I mean, do you think men are really listening better than they used to?
I'm not sure. I think what I'm hearing and reading is that some men are indeed much more concerned about their behavior. But I'm not sure how genuine that is. That, you know, some men say, well, I can't do the things that I might have done, or I'm going to be more careful relating with women because I don't want to get in trouble. But they may also at the same time dismiss this as trying to be politically correct or doing the right thing. Whereas what they really need to do is to take seriously these allegations and understand the pervasive abuse of power that really has gone on. Because it's not just, you know, in your normal interactions where you get sexual harassment, but in situations where there is a power relationship, where somebody has authority over another person in the workplace, or especially in the workplace.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I was just speaking with Tracy Thomas. She's the director of the Constitutional Law Center at the University of Akron. Hmm. And she was talking, I was speaking to her about this, and she was saying kind of the same thing, where it's a lot of this is, it's got to do not necessarily with a attraction issue so much as it is a power issue.
And absolutely. And that's what sexual harassment is about. And when we go through our trainings about sexual harassment, it's always about power. People are allowed to have sexual attractions to each other and relationships. It's when those attentions are unwanted and a one party does not feel they have the ability to say no because of that power relationship, because you're talking to your boss. And this goes for men and women as well. right? And men can be sexually harassed. It just doesn't happen as often. But whenever you're in an unequal relationship, power relationship, that's when sexual harassment emerges as an issue. If you have two people who are on the same status or feel a mutual attraction, that's not sexual harassment. That's a normal, healthy attraction, right? It's only when one side of the relationship has more power, and that changes the dynamic. And that's what people really need to keep in mind.
Well, I think also there's kind of an issue here with, it's hard enough to meet people, you know, in general, I think. And I think sometimes guys have it in their heads that, I'll tell you the truth, I don't think men are socialized to separate feelings of attraction for women from the places they feel them. You know what I mean? Because you grow up and you're in school and you're around peers and it's okay to ask girls out. And then you go to college and it's okay to ask girls out. And then you get into the workplace, especially if you have a career where you have to work to get to it, mm-hmm. you know, where you have to go through, and people have very similar mind and similar approach to life. And I think it's just another extension to a lot of guys where they've never been told that's a wrong thing. But I think that's what we're trying to get to now.
Right. Well, and certainly when you develop a relationship with somebody and you have mutual feelings, then that's a legitimate relationship. But the problem comes when we see situations like, for example, what they've been talking about, the allegations against Charlie Rose and how he would answer the door wearing a towel when his assistants would come to bring him information. And that's just Charlie being Charlie. That's not acceptable, right? Then somebody who is in a lesser situation in terms of their power in the relationship is being placed in a situation where unwanted sexual advances are being made on them. And that it doesn't mean that somebody is trying to attack them or actually have sex with them, but rather that they're being exposed to or treated in a way that makes them uncomfortable, especially uncomfortable sexually, when they are not in a position of equality.
Right. And I think there's a lot of subtlety here that guys are not quite getting. And I was actually just watching. I don't know if you know who Jen Kirkman is. She's a comedian.
Mm-mm.
And she was making a point about this very thing where she, and I never really realized this before, when, say, a woman walks by and a guy says, hey, and she doesn't respond to him.
Mm-hmm.
She says, it's not so much a problem the guy says hi. It's the problem that she doesn't know how he's going to react if she doesn't react the way he wants her to.
Right.
And there is this kind of thing. It makes me think in much more subtle terms, like how many times have I said something that I thought was playful or innocent or fun and she didn't, you know, and I didn't realize it, you know, because it's a weird, awkward thing. Now, I mean, I hope I didn't do that. I'm not really the kind of guy who hoots at women or anything, but I'm not that I'm a white knight. I'm just saying, you know, I don't really do that, but it's this kind of subtlety where it's not about this overt, you know, drive up in a white van and grab somebody and pull them in the van kind of a thing.
Absolutely not, right? I mean, and we hope that doesn't happen, but
of course.
It really is, it's a subtle pervasiveness that women have experienced and almost have become accustomed to. It's because it's so common. And this is why that hashtag MeToo campaign on social media raised so much awareness, because almost every woman can say that she has experienced some sort of sexual harassment. Now, the most cliched example is, of course, you know, a woman walks by a construction site and the construction workers make catcalls at her, right? And, you know, nothing's going to necessarily come of that, but that woman is concerned. Right? She doesn't know if she just ignores them what they're going to do. Or if she smiles back and says, hi, how you doing? What they're going to do, right? And so there is that uncertainty about those interactions, which make them really problematic.
One of the things about around here in this particular part of the world, this is a very red area of a very red state and very traditional sort of Christian conservative. And that's not a judgment call. That's how it is around here. And one thing I've noticed in this conversation is, and what I'm trying to find some women from around here to tell me is, how do women who do not necessarily have a progressive feminist kind of political approach front and center to their politics? And what's interesting about this is that I have talked to a handful of women around here and they don't want to talk to me on the record because they're worried about how it might come off if they tell me something. Now, off the record, there is a kind of an attitude of, you know, it's not so much blame the victim, but there is kind of an undercurrent of, well, if you're going to dress provocatively around men, you can't be surprised that you provoke men. And it's a little surprising to hear it and a little not, because it sounds kind of old fashioned. But having worked around here in the Northeast Texas area, I mean, have you come across this attitude yourself, or what do you think it comes from?
I'm not sure about that sort of attitude is at all unique or special to this area. That this is really has a long history of victim blaming, right? Where our culture has developed to the point where we say, oh, a woman who is attacked or a woman who is harassed, she's asking for it. She's dressing in a certain way. She's acting in a certain way. She's maybe flirting, and therefore she is inviting this sort of behavior. What I think that does is reinforces all these old traditional gender stereotypes, but also is actually fairly demeaning to men, because it assumes that men can't control themselves, that men are just sort of at the mercy of their hormones and they have no self-will. That sort of argument you can also see in discussions about veiling in the Muslim world, in that, you know, many women say, well, I can move freely. I don't have to worry about men's glances at me when I'm veiled because I'm covered and I'm protected, which is good for them, right? And that helps in that society. But it also suggests that men, you know, have some sort of problem. And I think we need to move beyond this and to think about how we can create gendered assumptions that are not you know, demeaning to either, right? That victims should not be blamed. It's not their fault. Women should be able to dress in the way that they want and not be subject to sexual harassment just because of the way that they're dressed. But we shouldn't also assume that men can't control themselves either.
As a man, I can say I appreciate that. Well, you know, I have to tell you that, and I know this is going to sound a little strange until I explain it a bit, but when you talk about the sort of the national mood, especially with a lot of powerful men getting toppled every day, I mean, it seems like every other day these days, some other icon of, you know, entertainment or business or something is getting his comeuppance because of being, you know, this kind of a guy. And in a strange way, I actually see a lot of parallels between this and the fall of the USSR back in the early 90s, which is there's this sort of old archaic system that just always was the way it was. It wasn't necessarily fair to a large group of people. And then when it broke kind of all at once, very suddenly, very surprisingly. And there's a lot of headiness back then. I remember in the early 90s, there was this sort of mood of, wow, we can go anywhere with this. Mm-hmm. And I think there's kind of that same mood here. Excuse me. I think there's kind of that same mood here when it comes to the conversation we're having. But at the risk of editorializing, I wonder where this is really going. So I'm curious, in that sense, where do you hope this conversation goes? And where do you fear this reality might end up?
I had never thought of that analogy before. I'm not sure how well it would hold up. But
please take it apart, please. You know, it's
you know, the collapse of the Soviet Union, there's this Wild West atmosphere, right? In the early 90s, you know, it was sort of chaos and a free for all, and ultimately that was really bad for society, and caused a sort of a backlash reaction in terms of reasserting after about a decade or so authoritarianism and state control over society, and sort of a reconsolidation. Here, I think it's not so much of a Wild West anything goes atmosphere, but rather a reset or a recognition that that there are pervasive almost institutionalized elements of inequality in our society, and that at this moment we are raising those and raising awareness of these inequalities, of these points where there is not an equitable relationship between people in positions of power and those who are not in those positions of power. And what I would hope will come out of this is a greater recognition and a greater awareness, a greater willingness to take these sort of behavioral issues seriously. And I think that's certainly what we are seeing in terms of the quick reactions against especially media and business celebrities who have been accused, that this sort of behavior is not acceptable, and it needs to be dealt with in a really decisive manner. Once that's taken care of, I would hope that our society can move on and have a more equitable relationship with each other, and especially in these positions of power, and that women would not be afraid, and men, to come forward when there is something that is not equitable.
Dr. Kowalski, Associate Professor of History and Director of the Gender Studies Program at Texas A&M University Commerce, thank you for your conversation.
Thank you, Scott.